Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500 from Wondery. How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing pretty good because we're sitting down to record again and I have a cold beer in my hand.
Oh, I'm doing pretty good because the Generation Y is brought to you by Wondery. We just released a little Patreon episode talking about our England trip. If you're a Patreon member, you'll hear about our little adventures.
I also released something on Patreon about Charles Albright, the eyeball killer.
Check that out. And you're going to be in Toronto soon?
True Crime Podcast Live in Toronto. I'm pretty excited about this because I've gotten to know some of the Canadian podcasters over the years, and some of them will be at this event. Nina from Already Gone. She's been a good friend for a long time. Jordan from Nighttime. Christy from Canadian True Crime. And good old Robin Warder from Trail Went Cold, who I think is a pretty good writer as well, if you've ever read his articles that have been published online. Anyway, there's going to be a live show, a podcaster's chat, meet and greet, and a Q&A. If you don't have tickets yet, go to theroyal.to, theroyal.to. Hit the schedule, go to August, find the 18th, and click away. There are tickets left, although I would move quickly to secure yours.
And I just did a spot with Nothing Rhymes with Murder, so look for that on their latest episode. And a huge thank you to Lainey from True Crime Fan Club and Lisa for the True Crime Podfest in Chicago. It was amazing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Tonight's case is something that we visit a lot. Is it homicide or suicide? In this case, the evidence is a little odd. So it leads to the question of, is the situation that happened even possible? So what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Back when I was around 10 years old, I got into murder mysteries. And we're talking Agatha Christie. Many years later, I started adminning a forum for an author named Michael Slade out of Vancouver, Canada. He told me about another author by the name of John Dixon Carr. And John Dixon Carr was well known for his locked room mysteries, which are, just as they sound, how did such and such person get murdered if the room was locked from the inside and there was no way for someone to get inside to kill them? Tonight's case is the murder of Ellen Greenberg, who died in a locked room.
So when and where did this happen?
This was January 26, 2011, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Ellen Greenberg was the only child of Joshua and Sandra Greenberg. She was a 27-year-old schoolteacher at Juniata Academy and held a master's degree in education with a reading specialist certification. And all that means is she would help students out that needed help with reading, or she could even help instruct teachers how to teach better when it came to reading. She obviously was passionate about education, and she worked with fairly young students. I think first graders, right?
Yeah, that's what I read, is at least elementary school, but first graders is what I saw.
One of the things that seemed to be going very well for Ellen was that she had a boyfriend who she was engaged to, and they seemed pretty smitten. His name was Samuel Goldberg.
They were planning their wedding, and she had introduced him to her family and friends, and everyone seemed to like him.
Now, there was this pretty serious snowstorm going on in 2011, and in fact, that year was in the top five in recorded history for the area for snowstorms. Obviously, that impacts the schools. That day, what we know about the day was at around 4:45, her boyfriend left to go to the gym. Now, the gym is at their apartment complex.
Yeah, it's like on the ground floor or something.
They're on the sixth floor. He just has to go down to go work out at the gym. He's gone for, they say, 30 to 40 minutes. Then he comes back. He tries unlocking the door, but it won't open all the way because the latch on the inside of the door is closed.
Yeah, it's like a latch solid bar door guard. It's what you see in a lot of hotel rooms and stuff. And since they live like in this apartment, condominium kind of deal, it's got a very hotel feel to it. So he opens the door, it opens a little bit, and then this latch catches and he can't get in the apartment.
At this point, he's getting upset because he wants to get into the apartment. He knows that his fiance is in there, but she's not responding. So he starts sending texts. So he's texting, "Hello, open the door. What are you doing? I'm getting pissed. Hello, you better have an excuse. What the F? You have no idea." These texts are taking place over, what, 15, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
To be specific, the texts are being sent between 5:32 and 5:54. This is going on an hour since he originally left, and yet he's not getting any response. So the next thing he does is he tries to seek out a security guard.
Yeah, they have like a front desk where a security guard sits after hours, I guess.
And he goes to the security guard and he says, hey, I'm locked out of my apartment. I need you to break in.
He has the key, but they have to break this latch. And the security guard refuses. He says, I'm not going to be liable for damages. If I help you do this, then you could literally hold me accountable for the damages. And I'm sure they have like condo, you know,
housing. It's their policy.
Yeah, exactly.
He goes back up six floors. And at some point, he decides to kick the door in. Now, this door isn't just a key. It's like you would see at a hotel. So it actually can record whenever the door is opened. So they know that it hadn't been opened, you know, and this is, they check later, they know it hadn't been opened since he left.
Because he hadn't used his key card to get to it.
He breaks the door in, according to him, because the door was locked from the inside. He couldn't gain access. And it's over an hour from the time that he had originally arrived back at the apartment when he calls 911. He found Ellen sitting. She was slumped in a corner of the kitchen. And she's up against the cabinets. And her legs are out in front of her. In her left hand is a towel. And on her right wrist is a hair scrunchie. There's not very much blood. He calls 911. And they say, you need to start CPR right now.
And this towel she has is white. And it doesn't have any blood on it.
But he calls 911 again because as he's starting the process, he notices that she has a knife buried in her chest. It's to the hilt of the knife. It's buried in her chest. And they say, you have to stop doing CPR now.
Yeah, because he's going to cause her more harm. So he's left the apartment for 30, 40 minutes. He comes back. He can't get into the locked apartment. It takes him about an hour before he decides to kick the door in. He finds his girlfriend slumped over, stabbed to death.
The Philadelphia EMTs pronounce her dead at 6:40. And apparently the Pennsylvania medical professionals can do that. But they can only do it in natural death?
Well, that's when she's pronounced dead, but have to figure out the time of death, which they know was hours, at least hours earlier.
The death isn't reported until later. And this is around 7:30 p.m. There are security cameras at these apartments, and it's the Venice Loft apartments. They don't show anyone entering or leaving the building at the time.
But let's specify, these cameras are only pointed at the entrances of the building. They're not in the hallways. So we can't track his movement from the apartment to the gym and then back up or kicking in the front door. We don't know where he was. We just have to go off what he says.
The police question Sam, but only briefly. Ellen's parents are notified. They lived about an hour west in a city called Harrisburg. A pathologist named Dr. Marlon Osborne is the one who performs the autopsy on Ellen. And when they transport her, they leave the knife in her body.
What does Dr. Osborne conclude?
Dr. Osborne found 20 stab wounds. He labeled in his report the stab wounds A through T. They were in her chest. The punctures were as shallow as 0.2 centimeters, which you could think of that as the knife being poked into somebody, or they went as much as 4 inches deep. 8 of those wounds were in her chest. 10 of the wounds were on the back of her neck.
What? Back of her neck?
Some of them were nicks, and some were up to 3 inches deep.
Okay.
She had bruises all over her body. In the report, it states that they were in various stages of resolution, meaning they happened at different times.
Okay.
They were on Ellen's right arm, her abdomen, and her right leg.
So this Dr. Osborne determines it to be a homicide. And going off the wounds, it appears that she was attacked from behind, stabbed in the back of the neck, Then she turned and they finished her off.
Or the perpetrator went around to her front and stabbed her in the chest.
Yeah. Pretty easy.
Homicide.
Yeah.
But the Philadelphia homicide unit says, we don't think this is a homicide at all.
But she was stabbed in the back of the neck.
Yeah, you could argue that. But the way they look at it is, we think that the medical examiner made a mistake. Let's talk about why the police got there, though. They say they investigated the scene. They didn't find a lot of blood. There was a knife block that was missing some knives. Two of the knives were in the sink. They appeared to be clean. They didn't have any blood or tissue on them. But the knife that was in Ellen's chest also came from that knife block. It was a Cutco knife, a steak knife.
Yeah.
But it was serrated.
Sounds very painful and brutal.
The knife block was on its side as if it got knocked over. And there's not a lot about this scene that looks out of place. Just the knife block, really. And then a dead woman.
There's not blood all over the place. There's not even defensive wounds on her arms or hands.
There is some blood on the cabinets behind her. There is some blood that was on the soles of her UGG boots and were on those boots. But surprisingly, there didn't seem to be a lot of blood for a stabbing. Now, the police, in as part of their investigation, they wanted to know more about Ellen. And what they found out was that she had been visiting a psychiatrist named Ellen Berman, and she had gone to see her on three separate occasions. And over those separate occasions, she had been prescribed different medications. Now, originally, the medications that she was given weren't really working for her. So by the end, they had settled upon Ambien and Klonopin.
She'd been given Ambien and Xanax, but the Xanax didn't agree with her, so they swapped it out for Klonopin. I've been prescribed all three of these things in my lifetime. I prefer Xanax over Klonopin myself. But these things are all meant, well, at least the Xanax and Klonopin are meant to treat the anxiety. Ambien is obviously a sleep aid.
And that's what the psychiatrist had said was, I'm treating her for severe anxiety.
Not depression, not anything else, but anxiety. It goes on to say that the months leading up to this incident, she was acting a little strange, didn't seem engaged, didn't want to talk about the issues she was having, and a little distant from friends and family.
Well, she did mention to her parents she was thinking about maybe moving back home. And this is while she's engaged, mind you.
Yeah.
Since she didn't just come out and say, you know, speaking to Sandra, she didn't say, Mom, I want to come home. She said, I'm thinking about coming back home. So I don't think that there was this need for her mother to address that right then and there. She probably figured she's mentioning it, she'll think on it, and then if it becomes serious, then we'll discuss it.
She talked about possibly having issues at work. I don't know. I've never been a teacher of, you know, first graders. I'm sure it could be a little hair-pulling at times, but I don't know what these issues would have been, and she didn't seem to share what the problem was. But you have possible unhappiness at work, and she's engaged to be married, and she's talking about moving back home. So are we going to assume problems with the marriage, or are we going to assume something else? I don't know. Where do you go from there?
Now, a quick search of her computer revealed that there had been some searches done. Most of them were done at 2 a.m. on the dates when they were searched, these keywords were searched. And then one was in the afternoon on a certain day. But the phrases were suicide, quick suicide, and painless suicide. Now, remember, we're going through why the police were thinking this was a suicide, that Ellen had taken her own life. There were also no apparent defensive wounds, especially, you know, you talk about a knife attack, you hold up your hands and your arms, so you should have some cuts, and they couldn't find any. The door to the apartment, as far as they could tell, because of what Sam Goldberg had said, was locked from the inside. This is a swing bar lock. There was no way that he could just get in there.
You know, I question this a little bit because he goes to get the security guard and the security guard says, I'm not going to help you break down the door. So the only evidence we have about this is damage to the actual swing bar. There you go.
They tested for DNA. What did they find with that, Justin?
Only Ellen's DNA was found on the knife.
This was the knife that was buried in her chest.
Yeah.
The police said that they hired an outside neuropathologist to take a look at Ellen's spinal cord. Remember, she had multiple stab wounds to her neck. And they wanted to see if the damage was enough to render her incapable of inflicting the wounds on herself, which at that point, if she was being stabbed in the neck with the knife that was found in her chest, if she couldn't use that knife anymore because she couldn't operate her arm, then how would the knife get in her chest? Obviously, at that point, it would be homicide.
Yeah, if you've severed your spinal cord, now you're paralyzed and you're not going to be able to finish yourself off.
According to the detectives, the neuropathologist report concluded that the sheath of the spinal cord was hit, but that the cord itself was not severed, which meant Ellen could have continued to stab herself even with the injuries.
She possibly might have gone numb even, so she could have stabbed herself more aggressively, according to them.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Now, on March 7th of 2011, the medical examiner's office changed its mind. And instead of homicide, they changed the ruling to suicide. This is amazing to me because it seems as though the homicide detectives were able to convince, this is just what it looks like, convince the medical examiner that it wasn't a homicide. And you have to remember, the homicide decision was made after examining and doing an autopsy on Ellen Greenberg's body, which of course the detectives didn't do. They're just looking at all the extra stuff. computer searches or what does the apartment look like?
But they'd kind of come to that conclusion of suicide before they even knew of the computer searches or lack of DNA on the knife or other factors here.
What's this about jumping to conclusions? They didn't have an autopsy report and they didn't know about the searches before they decided this is a suicide.
That's very questionable to say the least. And because they'd already made this determination, the fiance wasn't questioned. They hadn't gone and looked at security camera footage. They hadn't done any due diligence. They hadn't locked this scene down as a homicide scene.
Ellen's father is a doctor, and he and Ellen's mother decided to get their own investigator. This case just didn't seem right to them.
They want to challenge this finding.
And her father said when he was first told that his daughter was dead, he said he kind of went numb and he wasn't really able to process things very well at that point. But knowing that this death had been ruled a suicide after the original ruling of homicide, at that point, they were motivated to do something. They got their own investigators, and one of them is Tom Brennan, who is a retired Pennsylvania State Police veteran and a member of the VDOC Society, and the other one was a former Pennsylvania State Attorney General, Walter Cohen, who offered their services for free. Not surprising, these guys are there to help people. Now let's talk more about Ellen's severe anxiety.
From the toxicology report, they found trace amounts of Ambien and the Klonopin. Now, they look at the side effects of these drugs, and of course, you're going to find suicidal thoughts. A lot of mood stabilizing drugs and sleep aids have this as a side effect. And I absolutely will not deny that this doesn't exist, but when they do these trial tests, especially for pills that treat anxiety, treat depression, treat whatever, you have a pool of people that might already be suicidal, might already be depressed and have suicidal thoughts. So is it fair to say that all these drugs will cause suicidal thoughts? Or are some of these people already predisposed to that? It's hard to say, but the detectives run with this idea that she was on these drugs for anxiety and their side effects include suicidal thoughts and ideation.
Ellen had worked that day, meaning she didn't take these drugs before she went to work or at work. Based on the amount that she had in her system, it's obvious that she must have taken these or been given them, these drugs, after she arrived home from work.
Now, you wouldn't take Ambien in the middle of the day, though.
Unless you wanted to go sleep.
Oh, yeah.
How fast acting is it, did you find?
About 20, 30 minutes, you should be lying down. Otherwise, you could do the Ambien sleepwalk, which isn't fun.
Klonopin is, I guess, in the same family of medications as Valium. It's more intense. And they say that Klonopin and Ambien work well together. So you're not going to be worried about some kind of problem by taking both of them at the same time.
Yeah, they don't have any cross side effects or bad mixes. And I'll tell you right now, if you took Ambien and Klonopin, you're probably going to be knocked out. You're not going to be very functional at that point.
So if this was a homicide and she didn't have any defensive wounds, this might explain why.
You've essentially neutralized her. She couldn't fight off a physical threat. And also, if we're going with the homicide angle, if you attack somebody from behind, stabbing them in the back of the neck, and then they collapse down, and then you finish them off by plunging the knife into their chest, they're not going to have defensive wounds. We covered another case of a husband accused of killing his wife.
That was the case of Raven Abaroa, and his wife Janet had been found stabbed to death, only she wasn't stabbed 20 times.
She's stabbed once or twice, right?
Yeah, I can't remember. It was once or twice. And his story was that he left home and went to an indoor soccer game. And then when he came back, he found her dead.
And she was hunched over in kind of almost a yoga cradle pose with stab wounds to her neck that went down and killed her. No defensive wounds, no sign of struggle, just a quick stab. So you don't always have defensive wounds in a homicide. You just don't, especially if you're attacked from behind.
There's a real question here if Sam Goldberg had an effect on the way the detectives saw this case too. Remember, he's the one that said, the door's locked, I can't get in. Of course, he's saying that he had nothing to do with this. He wasn't even there.
He just happened to leave and go to the gym at the same exact moment this incident went down.
And it seems as though he's being taken at his word. Although one witness said when they saw Sam heading back up from the gym that he was wearing Timberlands, which are an odd choice if you're going to the gym.
Yeah, I would suspect tennis shoes or some sort of athletic shoes.
But that's not proof of anything. No. It's just a little odd. But there's a real question here if the word suicide gets brought up, if it sort of takes over. Remember, the original report by the medical examiner said this is a homicide. And that's from examining Ellen's body and looking at the wounds and where they were. And then, yet the detectives are saying, but she had severe anxiety. She was seeing a psychiatrist. And she also had sent a message to a family member that day that seemed as though she was really having some trouble that day. So for them, they see someone who might have been suicidal. So it's a question, like, do you put more weight on the original medical examiner's report? Or do you say, no, we need to look at all the other evidence. What did people say about her? She was seeing a psychiatrist.
I just don't like this. Just because you have anxiety, just because you were seeing a psychiatrist, that all of a sudden, all of your actions are called into question. I don't like that stigmatization of mental illness there.
Yeah, and that's something that we've found over time, is that people are quick to make assumptions. And it's not really fair. I mean, I know we have a number of listeners that have mental illness, and they will tell you, you can't just say, oh, based on something I said once, here's what's happening with me. It's a very complex issue. So I feel like they're not being fair to Ellen, I would say, in this whole situation.
Now, there was one other bit of evidence that I feel got glossed over by the investigation and the pathologist. But she had blood running across her cheek, correct?
She had blood that went from her nose to her cheek, but its path suggests that she was sideways.
So if she was laying on her side, it would have ran out of her nostril and down her cheek towards her ear. But the way they found her body, she was slumped, sitting up essentially, and her head was tilted the opposite direction. So how did this blood run uphill, essentially?
It makes no sense. And what it suggests to people who aren't the homicide unit in Philadelphia is that she may have been moved.
Or positioned in some way.
Now, before everyone starts letting their minds run, there was no evidence of a cleanup. And they looked. In other words, when there was some blood spatter behind her on the cabinets, there was no wiping done over them. There was no cleanup as far as they could tell.
So I'm going to try to tackle this as suicide real quick. I know a lot of people are like, why bother? It doesn't sound like suicide, but we have the doors locked. Who would have gotten in there? We have a white towel in her hand that doesn't have any blood on it. We have her being stabbed in the back of the neck. Now, I've never heard of anyone taking their own life by stabbing themselves in the back of the neck, but that's not to say that it's impossible. What's up with the towel? I think that possibly the towel was used as a grip around the handle of the knife to get more friction. That's my only plausible explanation here. But then you have the knife being plunged into her chest. So if she started stabbing the back of her neck and realized that wasn't working and then started stabbing herself on the front side, it is possible that her head was tilted in one way. Blood came out of her nose, ran down her cheek, and then she fell and slumped the opposite direction. But these are possible ideas here. Also, it is possible that she's on Ambien and she's on Klonopin, and maybe she had a very adverse reaction. Now, I don't want to get sued from the pharmaceutical companies here, but it's possible. You read about people on Ambien that do weird stuff. I had a weird situation with it once myself, but I wasn't functioning. You know, you hear about sleepwalking. So is it possible for her to have killed herself? Sure. I'm going to say it's possible. But then when you put in the other word of plausible, this is where I'm going to be like, well, I've never heard of anyone taking their life this way. Normally, if you're taking your own life with a knife, you're slashing your wrists. You're cutting your throat. You're cutting. You're not stabbing. It's just not the way people normally would do it.
Well, let's talk about the homicide angle. Originally, it was ruled a homicide. Later, that was changed to suicide. The police made a big deal out of the fact that they had her spinal cord examined by a neuropathologist who had told them, oh yeah, she could have kept stabbing because it wasn't damaged enough. Well, it turns out when the investigators asked, and this is the family's investigators, asked for that report to be produced, the police said, we don't know where it is.
Wait. So they say that they had a report from a neuropathologist who claims that she could have continued stabbing herself because she didn't sever her spinal cord. Therefore, it has to be suicide, but they can't produce this report.
Right. In other words, suicide is very possible. But if she had damaged it and she became immobilized, then there's no way that she could have stabbed herself in the chest and buried the knife in the chest at that point.
So it's possible that the wounds to the back of her neck could have paralyzed her and she would not have been able to continue with this attempt.
Because only this one knife was used, as far as they can tell.
So what did this neuropathologist say about this report?
Well, Lucy Rourke Adams was tracked down, and she says, I don't know that I worked on such a report or examined this woman's spinal cord because, one, I have no record of being paid for that, and I don't work for free, and two, there should be a report. And, well, no payment, no report probably didn't happen, which makes you wonder, how do they come up with this story at all?
Wow.
So remember, we talked about the blood that ran from the nose to the cheek. And the person who noticed that was a prosecutor named Guy D'Andrea. He discovered this by looking over Ellen's files. Now, it took them a lot of work to get files because even with FOIA requests, there wasn't a lot of assistance or cooperation on the side of the homicide unit. Now, he was asked about this, and he said, here's this quote, the blood path defies gravity. You don't have to be a pathologist to have an appreciation for that. Either she moved herself or someone moved her. So then he's thinking, well, okay, let's just say for the sake of argument, she moved herself. Maybe she shifted position somehow before she died. So he wants to look at the neuropathology report, but no such report exists, as we said. And he tried talking to Lucy Rourke Adams, and she's saying, no, I don't remember any of this. So it, again, is it a lie?
Well, yeah. And here is the thing is you have the blood running across her cheek. So let's say she was leaning or sideways and that blood ran across her cheek and then she shifted. Well, that blood had to have dried. because it didn't run back. So there's minutes here where she would have shifted back. This seems like it was a pretty brutal stabbing, and she most likely bled out or died pretty quickly. So this would have been her laying down or hanging out to the side and then shifting later. And she's on Ambien and Klonopin? It's a little unlikely.
Well, Thomas Brennan contacts another neuropathologist named Wayne K. Ross. And when he reviews all of the files, as well as the spinal cord, he had quite a different conclusion, which was, and I just need to read this so that you understand it. There was evidence of a stab wound which penetrated the cranial cavity and severed the cranial nerves and brain. As a result, she would experience severe pain, cranial nerve dysfunction, and traumatic brain signs and symptoms, including numbness, tingling, irregular heartbeat, and bradycardia, respiratory depression, neurogenic shock, and impaired loss of consciousness.
Sounds pretty serious.
There was evidence of strangulation. There was a mark over the front of her neck, which was consistent with a fingernail mark. There were multiple bruises under the neck and in the strap muscles over the right side of the neck. The patterns were compatible with a manual strangulation.
Whoa. How come none of this was in the original autopsy report? And why are we coming up with this now?
There were multiple bruises over the body, some of which were fresh, many of which were older. The patterns were consistent with a repeated beating. His opinion is this wasn't from bumping into things over time. This was from getting beaten. Now, it should be said that whenever anyone, including the psychiatrist, had asked Ellen about was your guy abusive or anything, she said, no, he's a wonderful man. But that's, you can take her at her word, but now we're wondering what this other evidence suggests. Not saying he beat her. I'm saying sometimes people don't share. So we have to allow, just like we allow the possibility of suicide somewhat, kind of have to allow the possibility that there's something else going on in this relationship that other people didn't know about.
Going off his text messages to her where he kind of goes aggro within an hour of not being able to get back into the apartment complex.
Within 20 minutes.
Yeah, within 20 minutes, really. Wow. You know, again, if I go with the suicide angle, she had a mark on her neck. Possibly she tried to hang herself. That didn't work out, so she stabbed herself with a knife. But we have no evidence of a belt in the closet or a rope or any kind of ligature, nothing. And then you bring up the fingernail mark. Well, since this wasn't investigated as a homicide, they didn't check his nails. They didn't check him for anything, really.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
It's no surprise, but Ross says this is indicative of a homicide.
Now we're looking at this situation in a whole new light, or some of us were already looking at it in that light, but she was having trouble. She was having anxiety. She told everybody her man was great, but she's struggling. She's getting prescription drugs, and she's telling her mom, I might move back home. And she has bruises on her body. Maybe there was something more going on here. I'm not trying to accuse. I'm not trying to point the finger. But this is just connecting dots here. Maybe she was thinking about leaving him because he was abusive. Maybe he found out about this. Maybe those suicide searches were valid. Maybe those were her searching for a way out. But she was searching for quick and painless, right?
Yeah, if we believe that she performed those searches, again, it's really odd that they're mostly happening around 2 a.m. and then one was in the afternoon. I wish they had investigated to see if they could show who was where and when.
Whose fingertips might have been at that computer at that time.
Right, because the only people who had access to it that we know of were Ellen and Sam. But again, it seems like Sam is being given the benefit of the doubt, which is odd because normally investigators will say, who do we suspect if there is foul play here? We're going to look at the SO, boyfriend, the husband.
If they're going to say, well, she was searching for painless suicide, and then say, see, she killed herself. This isn't painless. This is one of the most brutal ways, if this is a suicide, quote unquote, I've ever seen somebody take their own life. This is just god awful. In all of my lifetime, I've seen some pretty horrific stuff. And I've seen people take their own lives in pretty horrific ways. Never. And I'm surprised I'm saying this. I've never seen somebody do this to themselves. And taking into account that she might have been attacked from behind and she's taken Klonopin and possibly Ambien, she wouldn't have been able to defend herself. So, hence, no defensive wounds.
Yeah, she had close to 7.5 micrograms per liter of Klonopin in her system. She had a minute amount of Ambien, but that's because Ambien doesn't stick around. Again, it suggests that she ingested these drugs after she got home from school. But why would you take it during the day like that? Well, the afternoon. Is this because she's having trouble? Is she having issues where she feels she needs to take some medication?
Well, you're going to take those two things together so you can just shut the world out, go to sleep.
But we never really said what she was doing in her kitchen. In her kitchen was a bowl of fresh cut fruit. She had a towel in her hand. And as we talk about why this might be homicide, they didn't find any blood on that towel. So if she was using it to help stab herself, there should have been some blood somewhere.
Amen.
It was a clean, white towel.
So we have to assume that she's holding onto the towel with one hand and stabbing herself with the other brutally, and able to plunge that knife into herself with one-handed while on Klonopin and Ambien. Okay, got it.
And also, I don't know why the detectives didn't think of this, but the investigators for the family said maybe because she's on these drugs and her attacker blitzed her, meaning she was not expecting to be attacked, she was helpless. And that's why there are no defensive wounds. But what really struck me is not just the blood across the face that defies gravity, as the investigator said, but she was stabbing herself supposedly in the back of the neck and then was able to turn around and use the knife on her chest and actually plunge it into her chest. And she has injuries to both her spinal cord and her cranial cavity into her brain that defy explanation. I mean, how are you able to stab yourself in the chest with that much force after you already have wounds to your head and neck that suggest maybe you wouldn't have been able to do that?
And again, you're looking at that and saying, this does not make sense. You had me at stab wounds to the back of the neck. I don't even care if they severed her spinal cord or anything. Nobody stabs themselves in the back of the neck. That just doesn't happen. It's so unbelievable to me. Not to say that it's impossible, just very unlikely and not plausible.
Her time of death is placed, and I've read it a little different in a couple of different places, but 4 to 4:15 to 4:15 to 4:30-ish. These are times where Sam would have been at home.
Yeah, he didn't leave until 4:30, right?
Well, he left at 4:45.
Yeah.
And I've seen it placed as late as that. And some people say, well, what if there was a neighbor watching or heard him leave and then gained access to the apartment?
And then climbed out the back balcony and Spider-Man their way away?
Well, yeah, we're not sure on how they would have gained access or left because the door was opened at 4:45. That key card system, just like at hotels, they can monitor this. So they know that the door wasn't open again until it was broken into after 4:45. So how would someone have gained entry to the apartment? And this is something that at least seems obvious to me, but why don't people just look at Sam and say, are you sure she wasn't dead before you left?
I know. It doesn't even matter if it's he left and we're looking at this as, oh, he has an alibi. He was at the gym. It's possible that his alibi doesn't work out at all. And I mean, come on. You leave for the gym for 30 minutes at the exact same time this goes down.
What is this about bad luck?
Yeah.
Right? What are the odds? All I'm trying to say is, I'm not calling for Sam Goldberg to be arrested. All I'm saying is, I think in most other police departments, Sam would have been grilled a lot harder. I don't want this to go out as, oh, the police don't do their job. No, I feel like if this was some other police department that was investigating this, I think Sam would have been under a lot of pressure to explain himself and explain this timeline, explain how the door was only opened at 4:45 and wasn't open again until he kicked it in, and how his girlfriend is slumped over dead, and yet she has a blood trail on her face that defies gravity, and she has somehow sustained wounds that should have rendered her pretty incapable of stabbing herself in the chest, plunging the knife in like that.
One-handed.
And then a toxicology report that suggests that she was probably really out of it.
I mean, we just covered the Pine case. That guy was found guilty on way less. So let's go back to the door. You know, like you said, locked door. Apparently, there are YouTube videos on how you can lock a swing bar behind you using rubber bands and whatnot. I don't want to give it too much away because I don't want to give anyone ideas, but you can find ways to lock a door behind you. It's not impossible. And in this case, plausible.
As part of this case, there is some debate over whether the security guard was on scene or not when the door was kicked in. But as far as I could tell, there appeared to be a call-in from the security guard's radio stating that there was a dead woman in the apartment. So it may have been a situation where he said, I'm not going to break the door in, but decided to go up after he knew Sam was going to go kick it in. I don't find that suspicious. I mean, I could understand why the security guard would want to see what was going on if he was there.
Absolutely.
But there is some debate about it. I don't think it's a big deal. I think for me, this case touches upon several disturbing subjects that we really haven't dealt with well enough yet in our society. One of them is the possibility of domestic abuse and how not everyone's willing to talk about it. And I've got no room to tell people what to do. I'm just saying Ellen was telling everyone that everything was great. Her boyfriend was great. But there are some clues here that suggest there might be abuse. The bruising, that was obviously from different times, different dates. And then you have the mention that she might want to come home.
And then his aggro text that he sends to her when he can't get in the apartment. I mean, maybe that's just the way he talks, but they didn't sit well with me.
This is an anecdotal question, Justin. But if you couldn't gain access to your apartment, not that you live in one, but if you did, and your wife was inside and you couldn't get in and she was not responding to you, and this is over 20 some minutes, are you going to go aggro or will you have maybe a different emotion?
Well, if we weren't fighting and if there wasn't any conflict, I would be saying, are you okay?
Many people are asking this question about Ellen Greenberg. Why was Sam so angry with her right off the bat?
You better have a good excuse. Wow.
Right. How is your relationship? Oh, it was great. Right? We hear that all the time. But what was really going on? The other subject that it touches upon is depression, suicide, anxiety. Many people deal with these things, and we all have different levels. With her, it was severe anxiety. At least that's what the psychiatrist said.
Which I personally don't associate that with suicide. Depression and all these other things, I do. But just anxiety alone, and I might be off base, I don't mean to be, but anxiety is more debilitating, not suicidal.
You and I both have had anxiety.
Yeah, and at no point did I think suicide. It was just, wow, I can't handle this stuff right now.
Stressed out.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to take a break or freak out.
Yeah.
But not hurt myself. Again, anecdotal, but...
Absolutely.
The psychiatrist even said that she didn't see any hint of suicidal thoughts with Ellen. We're going off of the computer searches, and the computer really wasn't searched until many years later. I think it was 2018.
So this guy had the computer this entire time.
It was in the possession of Sam Goldberg's family.
So we can't verify who made these searches. We can't verify anything.
The attorney general, as part of their investigation later on this, said they looked into it. And very interestingly, they arrived at the same conclusion that the police did, which was this was a suicide. And instead of pointing at the medical report, the autopsy, they pointed to the computer searches. And because she was seeing a psychiatrist. So again, blame the victim, it sounds like, instead of what really happened here.
If you find my body and I've been stabbed in the back or in the back of the neck, I don't care what my history or computer searches say. I've been murdered. Please investigate.
My conclusion in this case is that Ellen Greenberg was murdered. I can't say who, although I think there's a good suspect they should have questioned more. I feel like Ellen was silently suffering. That's my gut feeling on this. And it's really sad that someone who was silently suffering died in such a violent way, and then the authorities failed her and put the blame on her for what happened.
I mean, I can understand coming to a suicide conclusion much later, but they came down on this immediately, and they didn't investigate it as a homicide. So therefore, a lot of things fell through the cracks. And that's the problem. There's no way you could determine this as a suicide just by walking on the scene, looking at it, and just going, oh, yep, suicide. There's no way. It's impossible. And even the pathologist said it was homicide, but changed it later.
Well, and that medical examiner left, moved to another state, and will not talk about this case. I don't know if that's surprising, but it feels like you can find a lot of problems with the investigation. And for me, the biggest problem, aside from just saying it's suicide early on, was this supposed neuropathologist report that said, no, she didn't hurt her spinal cord in such a way that she couldn't continue stabbing. Only that neuropathologist, Lucy Rourke Adams, says, I was never paid, and I have no memory of this, and there's no report.
It's weird, and I'm not going to jump to conspiracy, but wow, just make stuff up.
For those of you who listen to this episode and will probably go out and read all kinds of articles on this case, you'll probably only get angrier at this whole situation. It's really just These are the kinds of cases that cause people to lose faith in our system. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.